Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC, and now we continue our May series, Legal Weed. Each week this month, we're hearing from Mark Kleiman about the logistics of introducing legal marijuana at the state level. There were those two referenda in Washington and Colorado that legalized recreational marijuana. He's currently advising Washington State on their process, and he's also professor of public policy at the UCLA School of Public Affairs and co-author of Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know. Today, the economics of legalizing pot. Hi, Mark. Welcome back.
Good morning, Brian.
So you've told us on the air before that the taxes for marijuana are set in the Washington legalization measure, which passed, they were set in the referendum, about a third of what the customer pays will go back to the state, is what you said. So what does that mean for the final price? What would an ounce, let's say, go for compared to on the black market?
We don't know yet, and the answer is probably going to change with time. Early on, I'd expect the legal price to be close to the illicit price, but as producers get more and more confident that they're not going to run into federal enforcement, I would expect those prices to fall. Already in Washington, the quasi-legal medical market is trading substantially below illicit market prices, about $10 a gram for high-potency pot. That's lower than prices nationally.
And we've talked before about how you think marijuana should not be cheap, and you've told us that you think we should triple the alcohol tax for the same reason, because these are substances that are harmful and shouldn't be too affordable. So where's the sweet spot?
Well, are harmful used in excess?
Yes.
And the good thing about taxation is it doesn't bother much people who are using a little bit, and it starts to eat into the consumption of people who use a lot, which is exactly what you want.
Right. And we saw your opinion piece in the New York Times Room for Debate feature on regulating marijuana, and you wrote about three mistakes that officials should avoid, and one of them was don't get greedy. In other words, don't let states become financially dependent on consumers who are chemically dependent. And you've told us before that most use is by relatively few heavy users.
Right.
So are you saying that revenue sources from taxation or revenue from taxation of marijuana, which has been one of the arguments for the legalization of what was a huge black market industry, is not a good argument?
It's a good argument. You'd rather have the money going to the state than to the than to the criminals, unless you're Grover Norquist. But you don't want the state trying to maximize that revenue by maximizing the amount of drug abuse. So we see the state lotteries relentlessly promoting compulsive gambling. That's the model I don't want to follow.
And also in your Times Room for Debate feature, one of the three mistakes that you said officials should avoid is don't allow marketing. And there are already types of marijuana that consumers are familiar with. You talked about Diesel, for example, or Purple Crush. So if they're going to label these brands, how do you do that without allowing advertising or brands to emerge?
I think it's a great question, and I don't think anybody's got a good answer. Especially if it got legalized at the national level, the current Supreme Court jurisprudence on commercial free speech would probably make most marketing restrictions impossible. I think there's a case for doing away with brand names and requiring a generic label that simply has the chemical content. But that's
not Washington's plan. So somebody will walk into one of these new marijuana storefronts and they'll see Purple Kush or they'll see Diesel?
I think that's probably right. At least at first, they won't see advertisements for it in the newspaper, because that would attract unwanted federal attention. And I think the board's going to try and put some limits on what sellers can say to buyers. But whether that's going to be stable over time or not, I don't know.
On the topic of taxation and revenue, a report from Colorado State University, and that's the other state where a referendum passed, this report found that legal marijuana in that state may not pay for itself. They looked at the cost of law enforcement, public health, and human services, and the decline in the wow factor of having legal marijuana eventually, and determined that all the extra costs would outweigh the tax revenue. Have you seen that report, and do you agree that that might happen?
I've seen that report, and I couldn't quite make the arithmetic work. For one thing, they're assuming a very low price. They're assuming the price that Rand estimated as the long-term cost, around $600 a pound. But in fact, we know what the wholesale prices are. They're more like $2,400 a pound in the markets where it's quasi-legal under the medical system. So I think they're starting with a way low price estimate. And then they seem to be doing some odd counting where they're not counting the current enforcement cost, but they are counting all the costs of administering the new system. So I haven't talked to the authors of the report, but it looked to me like they set out to reach a conclusion. That may not be fair, but I was having trouble figuring out what they were doing.
And it's still against federal law. So can distributors and retailers have bank accounts? Maybe you can't register the bank accounts under the names Diesel and Purple Kush, but will people be able to use credit cards to buy weed, and how will taxes be collected?
It's an absolutely central question and one that's not solved at the moment. The federal money laundering laws, at least on their face, make it a crime to introduce into the banking system the proceeds of illegal activity. So as far as I can tell, if you're a drug dealer and pay your rent with money you earn drug dealing by check, you've committed another federal crime. At the moment, the banks are very nervous about this. And most banks will not do business knowingly with a cannabis enterprise. So some of these are unbanked. They're operating purely in cash, which is a terrible idea. Others are simply essentially set up shadow accounts. Denver Flower Company or something. And that's the business that's doing business with the bank. And in principle, the bank doesn't know what they're doing.
But since they're going to have the storefronts in Washington State, wouldn't it be fraudulent to set it up as, Seattle Flower Company or something like that?
Utterly fraudulent. I mean, that's clearly money laundering.
Yeah. So it's going to be a cash
argument that if you wrote marijuana on the deposit slip, you wouldn't be doing it secretly, and that would get you out from under the law.
So that's going to be a cash storefront economy, at least to start out?
Washington has actually discussed chartering a state bank just to do this business. Because if it stays a cash economy, enforcement gets to be hard, tax collection gets to be hard. Mm-hmm. There's a different tax problem.
And we're out of time. Mark Kleiman. We'll pick that up next week as we have one more session in this series with Mark Kleiman, who is advising Washington State on their marijuana legalization process. Thank you so much. Talk to you one more time.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC.